Welcome to the Geek Matrix. You are not alone.
Hey everybody, it's Josh here with episode 150, or is it? We could relaunch our episodes, but you've heard us reviewing DC Comics for a while now, and you know how much we love legacy numbering. So here we are at episode 150, and by the time you are hearing this, you have certainly already seen it. While I promise that at least most of us here are still not robots, we definitely are all geeks for one thing or another. So let's start this thing out right. Hey, everybody, and hello, listeners out there in podcast land. This is Josh, and this is the Geek Matrix Comic Review Show. With me, bravely venturing out into this new unknown land, are my two cohorts in comics, Rob.
What's the difference between a fish, a piano, and an owl?
I have no fucking clue.
You can tune a piano, but you can't tune a fish.
What about the owl?
Who?
Nice. Thought you were going to get me more than once on that one. Thank you, Rob. And backing us up with the eye rolls every time one of us tells a bad joke is our good friend, Brandon.
Hello, hello.
I could feel the eye rolls through the microphone.
Yeah,
you can. They're damn near seismic. All right, so we are the Geek Matrix, and you can get quick links to our podcast shows, Twitters, and email at our new website, thegeekmatrixpod.com. You can also go there to sign up for our Discord, which shows us some love and gets you chatting with us, plus access to our spotlight shows that we put out every week here and other bonus episodes of who knows what else we'll be doing. You'll also get a shout out on the show each and every week from us, and all you have to do is be a member. Speaking of us and speaking of comics, that is what we are here for. So, guys, is there anything huge in the way of news, rumors, and what the hell ever?
Yeah, I just want to point out my country's on fire.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's right.
Like all over the freaking okay, not all over the place anymore. The prairies over by Kirk and Jess, you've heard on the network before, it seems to have died down a bit over there, but now, like I told the guys earlier, Canada's been literally burning the candle at both ends because the East Coast last week decided to burst into flame.
Bookend blazes.
Yeah, and now my area is getting a little smoky, so it's certainly interesting. It's like Australia in 2020. It's just fire.
Yeah. That's no good.
Yeah. Hopefully. And they turned out okay, I think. So hopefully we'll be okay too.
Now that depends on what you think of Aussies.
And anybody that can live in the most dangerous place in the world and just be happy about life, they're good in my books.
Yeah. Very well true. They're good or they're completely fucking nuts. It's definitely one of the two, though. Could be both.
Or both. Definitely. I think definitely both. I used to watch The Crocodile Hunter. I know all about that.
That's insane. That's noise. All
right. I watched that one episode of South Park.
Crikey. All right. So, Canada's on fire, huh?
Yeah. And not in a good way.
Yeah, not the free kind of smoke somebody would want. Good.
That's been legal a few years anyway.
Sandwiches are legal, but a free one is still better than nothing.
Yeah. You got a point there.
free sandwich tastes better than one that costs $5. What are you talking about?
I want to put an asterisk on that because, like, uh-oh. Sure, a free sandwich could taste better than a $5 one, but if that free sandwich is on the concrete and ants crawled all over it, I don't think it would taste better than a $5 sandwich, even if it was free, you know?
Well, I mean, it's all perspective. It's all point of view. Depends on how hungry you are.
I might like
and the if taste you've of got ants. That $5. Yeah, plus ants are a great source of protein.
Yeah.
Brandon is passed out from the eye roll. please. Unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah,
please, please, please save us from this tangent.
All right, so we do have some actual comic book news, Rob.
Yes.
I know you've been staying on top of this. I haven't had the chance.
I've been excited about it since I heard about it.
You're right. I have too, and I am really looking forward to hearing what you got to share with us.
All right, so, and look at me being professional. Let me pull up the creative team. Boom, 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 boom. There is a new book announced this week. Technically, it's kind of shadow or pseudo, I guess, announced by the writer, who is Kelly Thompson. And she announced a Birds of Prey relaunch, another book with art from Leonardo Romero.
Who doesn't want a Birds of Prey book? Seriously.
Exactly.
I mean, we've been asking for one for a while.
Exactly. And this
big question is, who's on the team?
That is the big question. If you've not been following Kelly Thompson's Twitter feed this past week, she did announce with the book announcement that there are 5 members to the team, and she kind of hid the symbols in different colored hearts, each color representing the character that is to be announced. And the first one announced, of course, is the team leader, Black Canary. You have to have Black Canary. And a lot of people are going to say, as I've seen online too, if you're going to have Black Canary, you have to have Oracle and Huntress too. They are the Birds of Prey. Well,
they're the OG Birds of Prey.
They're the OG Birds of Prey, but they're also the ones that everybody associates with the at least the team, right? At least that trio to start with. They're basically deconfirmed.
Yeah, well, and on top of that, Babs as the Titans that she's going to be Oracle for, still the whole Bat family.
Yeah,
she hasn't put the suit down yet. She, her and Dick are getting super duper serious. They've got a dog now. I mean, shit, she's got no time to be also a part of the Birds of Prey. And Huntress, both of them have got a shitload going on too.
Yeah, so they're kind of busy. But Black Canary's involved. Tuesday announced the second character, who is a Bat family character, and that's Cassandra Cain, Batgirl. I think all her right. first time on the team. Hell yeah.
All right.
Wednesday saw another character who I want to say was on the team before, but I think not. Big Barda.
Yes.
She was, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so that's her return to the team.
Wait a second. When was Big Barda on the team? You like, got to help me out there.
2008, 2009. They did an expansion of the team during 1 year later. And they brought in like Big Barda and Misfit. And like when you see, I think this is Misfit. Around like the maybe hundreds or 110s or something like that. I think it's around when Nicholas Scott came on the book. But yeah, no, she was on the team. For a hot minute.
Right on.
Completely and, forgot about that.
Yeah. So somebody was telling me that Barda was on the team, but I couldn't quite remember. Thank you, Brandon.
Yeah.
And finally today, and this is a character I've been waiting to hear your guys' thoughts on, especially Brandon's being a fan of this team.
Wait. Hold on. So how many members do we have so far?
So far there's 3. The fourth was announced today.
All right, we've got Black Canary, we've got
Cassandra Cain, and Barda.
So yeah, we're still just waiting on one more after this,
yeah, which will be announced tomorrow around 3:00 Eastern time. And that's represented by a red heart. So Black Canary was represented by a blue heart because her new costume has a lot of blue. Cassandra was represented by a black heart. Barda was also represented by a blue heart, if I remember right. And this character today was represented by a red heart, as well as the character tomorrow. And the character today is none other than Zealot of the Wildcats.
Yeah. Hot weight. Wait a minute.
That's fucking wild.
Dude, Zealot. Yeah, well, Wildcats. But yeah. man, Zealot working together with Babs.
Well, not necessarily.
Or not Babs, excuse me. Not Black Babs. Canary. Black Canary.
Yeah.
That's what I meant to say.
That's going to be weird.
It's going to be explosive.
There's been a lot of criticism already about the choice of Zealot that I've seen online. People saying that that the roles Zealot can fill is already kind of filled by other characters, like being a pseudo powerhouse with Barda, combat master between Cassandra and Black Canary. Same with the stealth, Cassandra's got that down pat. You could have had Katana to fill the sword play. So Zealot's kind of I'm excited regardless.
What I'm hearing is there's a whole bunch of stealth and then Barda.
Pretty much.
So and Barda's not like she's walking around with like incredible Hulk footsteps, stomp, 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 stomp. So I mean, it almost sounds like we're getting a almost like a Black Ops kind of Birds of Prey.
Could be. But they are all in colorful costumes. So like Barda's in her classic New Gods costume. So I don't know how Black Ops it is.
Well, I mean, relatively speaking.
Yeah. I think the two favorites for the fifth slot, considering it's a Red Heart, could either be Red Canary, brand new character, or Harley Quinn. A part of me would honestly like to see Harley.
That would be, it would be interesting to bring her in. It would be a cool thing to do with her character, especially with all the hero questions that she's got. They've been thrown around in her book lately.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see that happen. Red Canary, I want to see more Red Canary, but I don't want to see it in Birds of Prey. I want to see her coming of age with other younger heroes.
Yeah.
I'm just... So the only other person, and I'm trying to rack my head around red-suited female heroes.
Red Arrow.
And there's Red Arrow, and then the only other person that I can think of is Jesse Quick.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Judo Master.
There's Judo Master.
Yeah, but do we really need somebody named a Judo Master?
Who's already been on the Birds of Prey, so has a connection.
Yeah, like what's wrong with Judo Master?
They're named Judo Master.
So?
Also Manhunter.
Manhunter, yeah.
Plenty of other red themed heroes.
I've seen Manhunter passed around recently online as well.
With it being Kate?
Yeah, Kate Spencer.
That could be good too, but then that just leads more to this whole yeah, but it leads more to like even more to the whole this is a spy team kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they've always been a spy team. Are they not like a parody of Charlie's Angels? Isn't that kind of the point?
Yeah.
I feel like it would be pretty fitting for them.
I didn't think about it before, but I think Emiko might be the perfect fit.
I could see that.
Yeah. And she's got that connection with Dinah, so.
Wait, I'm sorry. I didn't hear that. I was too busy coughing my brain. So you said who would be a perfect fit?
Emiko.
Oh, yes, yeah. Dude. It would be really cool to see an Arrow on the team.
Yeah.
That's being led by Black Canary. But not one that's not obviously not Red Canary. She's too young. She needs somebody that's good, but needs some honing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Emiko is perfect for that.
Yeah.
I hope that's who it is.
Yeah, I think my money now is on Red Arrow. Yeah. Yeah, either way, I'm excited for 3 o'clock tomorrow.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Or Mira Dearden. Oh, who has just recently come back, right?
Yeah.
That's true.
I keep forgetting that Mia wears red. I don't know why I keep thinking green, but that's because of Young Justice.
Well, everybody that spins out of Ali has red on at some point for the most part, don't they? Why is that? That's really weird. It's a
perfect complement to green. They are complementary colors.
I mean, that's true.
Yeah.
I think gray is a better complementary color to green, but you know, whatever.
You're so Slytherin. Oh god.
Bitch, I'm Ravenclaw.
So Brandon, I am
telling you, in another life, I was Luna Lovegood.
What are your thoughts on Zealot joining the Birds of Prey?
I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I'm not really sure how that's going to work necessarily. Yeah. I recall reading the Wildstorm 30th, and they established that Zealot has some kind of relationship with what was her name? Who's the woman from Shadow War?
Angel Breaker.
Yeah, it was established that Zealot has a relationship with Angel Breaker. But we also know from the Shadow War tie-in that Angel Breaker was taught, or at least mentored, by Black Canary. But it seems like Angel Breaker and the Coda, or Zealot and the Coda, or something like that, have some kind of master plan for the DC universe. So it could be that, you know, Zealot is like a sleeper agent or something, but I don't know how that would factor into Wildcats.
Did they not just bring up Angel Breaker and Wildcats, or am I crazy?
Yeah, I think she was there.
She was in the issue where Grifter was escaping Karak or Kandak or whatever country it was. But yeah, she didn't make any mentions of Zealot that I can remember.
No, she just showed up in the book though, right? So, I mean, there's a connection. It's just the loosest of all connections.
Yeah.
Well, man, I mean, all I know is this. I'm really excited to hear who the next person is tomorrow.
Yeah.
But the cast already has me going, what in the hell kind of book is this? Because this could be like a super secret spy team, but this also has the potential to be an off the wall, balls out, full force assault team as well. And
yeah,
it's gonna be interesting. I hope it's not just one or the other. So it'll be fun to watch it go back and forth, and hopefully the mastery is there to be able to pull it off right, because we've needed a Birds of Prey book for a while.
Definitely.
With or without Barbara Gordon.
I hope she's at least present somehow. Not necessarily on the team, but a part of it.
Well, I mean, by extension, I mean, she has, with at least Cassandra, but I'm also curious, when does this book come out?
There's no release date set, but it's supposed to come out in the fall.
Okay, all right. So we have plenty enough time for Cass to get back from Spirit World then.
Yeah.
Good deal. After rescuing Black Alice inadvertently. Good deal. Please. We all have wants, right?
Exactly. All right. Well, that's it for me. What you guys got?
I want $1,000 computer. Or I want $1,000 for actually $999 for a computer.
I know you mentioned it.
Did I tell you guys about it last week? I
think so.
Yeah, I got it. It bounced around in my head for a second, and I found one. It was 41% off. It's not the best, but I got a great fucking graphics card. I got a 3060 Ti in it. So
nice.
Very, very happy. Going to be playing some really beautiful Hogwarts Legacy and Gotham Knights here. As soon as I get the rest of it all set up.
Right on.
That's about it with personal news from me. Brandon's just breathing, huh?
I don't really have anything major, just one book recommendation, which is certainly not unknown for me, but this one I really wanted to recommend because it's kind of related to some of the people that we've talked about here. But Marvel just put out Loki number one from Dan Waters, German Peralta, or Herman Peralta, and Mike Spicer. And like, I was going to check it out just because the team interested me. And, you know, I was like, yeah, why not? It could be fun. But it was really good, actually. And I would highly recommend it, even if you're vaguely a fan of the Thor mythos or of Loki.
Oh, you know what?
Gotta check that out.
There is one tiny little bit of news that we had forgotten to mention. We announced that we're at episode 150. We announced that we're the Geek Matrix, but one thing we forgot to announce were the two bonus episodes that would be coming out in normal podcast land. At the same time as this episode, we have, of course, all the special guests from our Discord that are a member of the LGBTQIA+ community coming in for DC's Pride book and doing reviews and discussion on that. And we also have an interview with the wrapped up writer of The Flash, new writer of The Green Lantern, Jeremy Adams. So make sure you guys are keeping your eye out and ears open for those.
They were fun to record, both episodes. Jeremy Adams especially. I wish we could have talked to him for like another hour.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. He's a great guy, and he's a real, real comic book fan, not even just of one particular character. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, if that is it for the news, rumors, and what the hell ever, let me go ahead and really briefly mention some books that we aren't covering this week on either show. We have Dark Knights of Steel number 11. It's badass. It's when I heard we were taking our superheroes and putting them back into medieval times, I thought we were going to get something like Justice League Jurassic or whatever the hell that thing was called. And I fully anticipated a disaster. We did not get a disaster. Every issue has been awesome. This one is no different. A series that didn't have that same streak of luck, but has been doing pretty damn good so far, lately anyway. The Joker, the Man Who Stopped Laughing, number 9. That was badass. Peacemaker Tries Hard, number 2. Not quite so badass. This is something y'all can skip. The Joker Uncovered, number 1, is just a gigantic collection of Joker covers. And man, if you're into the art, there is some beautiful shit there. It's gorgeous. I would go pick it up if you're a Joker fan at all. And the one book that I did not get a chance to pick up and read yet that I really do want to is the Milestone Initiative. I haven't gotten a chance to poke my nose into that one, but I will be soon. Other than that, on this show, Rob's going to be walking us through Adventures of Superman, John Kent, number 4. I'll handle Shazam, number 2. And Rob will go back with Poison Ivy, number 13. And finally, Brandon will wrap this show up, telling us all about Batman, number 136. The rest you will hear about on our Spotlight show in our Discord. And you want to go ahead and start us off, Rob?
Definitely. Yeah. So this is honestly, I got to say though, it feels weird to not be the host.
I imagine it does. It felt weird when I slobbed.
So yeah, this is Adventures of Superman, John Kent, number 4, written by Tom Taylor with pencils from Derek Robertson, inks from Derek Robertson and Norm Ratman, colors from Jordi Belair and letters from Wes Abbott with a cover from Clayton Henry and Marcello Maiolo. Before I start, I just gotta say, like, I went into this, I completely forgot Derek Robertson was drawing it. It did not look like Derek Robertson art.
I'm with you there, dude. I mean, because I did the same thing when I went to look at the credits on this thing, and I was like,
yeah,
wow, because this is Derek Robertson. Like, I'm not knocking Derek Robertson. His lines are a little too thick for me. And he tends to draw a little chunky. He's a great artist, but those are just two critiques. You don't have that problem here. This issue is fucking...
Yeah, it's like it was refinished by somebody else. Like, he's got that distinct style that you can tell in every book, yeah. And it just doesn't have it here. It's really weird.
Well, I
still like it. Like, it's still good.
It's there. It's just toned down significantly in it. It works, man. It works. This art is gorgeous.
It is really good. Okay, so simply put, this issue is very kind of short feeling. John investigates more of the strange new world he's inhabited, but he's not sure who to trust. He does notice somebody taking a body away and finds out it's Lex Luthor. So he follows him all the way to the insurgency base, where he finds Batman and other members of the insurgency in the core Bat family. And is quickly beat down, but proves he's not there to spy on them and instead is there to help with a bit of help from this world's version of Alfred. He then decides, since he can't completely trust the insurgency side, that there must be somebody he could talk to try and figure things out. So he goes to the one person he always could trust, Jay Nakamura, at least this world's version of Jay Nakamura. And Jay is hesitant at first, but eventually begins to trust John as well and tells him the civilian perspective of what Superman is doing with the regime. It's not good. John leaves, but Damian bugged him earlier on with a tracker and now interrogates Jay after breaking in to find out what he told John. So I did mention it's a little short. I'm very freaking curious where this is going to go. this book, we did know that this book was going towards an injustice angle before it even came out, but it really took a turn.
It still is, like, I don't know, it feels so weird to be reading John Kent and Injustice, but not yeah. not in a what am I reading kind of way, but like a what is coming next kind of way.
Yeah, and it's even weirder for me. Like, the first two issues were very fast paced and very like in your face about stuff, but then 3 and 4 are very slow paced. Like, almost nothing happened so far. Since John came to this world, it's just him exploring and finding out how fucked up it is.
Yeah, it's
but know, the first two issues you had, John is threatened. John finds another Superman. John finds another Lois. John goes to another world. John gets attacked in the other world. John nearly dies. John's captor is killed, and the other Superman is attacked and goes disappearing. The other Lois is dead. Technically, and all this shit happens in 2 issues, and then 3 and 4, John looks around the planet. it's really weird pacing, but it's good.
It's done right because it's slow where it needs to be. Now, like it's like I said, you know, slow where it needs to be. This one is pretty quick just because it's so cut and dry and what happens. Yeah. You know, like you said, he's John, so he's not going to go charging in feet, fists first like Clark used to do so much. He sits back and assesses everything first, you know, and he's not going to make any rash judgments. I mean, so at the end of this, he knows he's on Batman's side. How do you beat an evil Superman? But with a good Superman wielding yet another evil Superman's technology, I mean, sounds like, I don't know, man. It almost sounds like Superman Inception to me. I can tell you, reading this made me miss Injustice 1 and 2, and I want to go play it now.
Yeah.
Seeing Robertson draw a little on the tamer side, and I'm sure that had something to do with Norm Ratman's ink going over top of him. But it really does work in this series, as does Damian's costume. I love Damian's costume in it. The story is great. Like Rob said, I've got it right down here in my notes. It's moving pretty fast and slow at the same time. But that's kind of like what Tom Taylor does. In the series Injustice, and in all of his deceased, it's the exact same way. You can count on it being super fast and slow at the same time, and it will be emotional. This is a bit of a darker story for John, a bit of one of the darkest ones since the volcano, but I can't wait to read more of it. Now, at the end, we see Jay Nakamura. If I'm not mistaken, he dyes his hair in our universe because he's blonde, isn't he, or no? not a big point.
No, he's got like purple hair or something.
Purple hair. Okay. I knew it wasn't dark. But anyway, all right. So he tries to get a kiss from John. John says, yeah, sorry, that would still feel like cheating on my Jay. And then he flies out. Damien, he jumps into the same window John flies out. And he, I don't know, there's something about it which makes me feel like Damien and Jay know each other. Like, if this was just some normal dude, he would have knocked him around first. Especially this Damien. This Damien likes to fucking hurt people.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if Jay still has a superhero boyfriend. That would be interesting.
That would be very interesting. But he also seemed very apprehensive to superheroes in general because of maybe it's just Superman. I don't know.
Maybe it is just Superman. Who knows? I looked at that and I thought, well, there's a possibility there because Damien would have fucking came in and mashed him once to show him he was mean in business.
Yeah.
But anyway, who knows? Who knows?
I'm at the end of the day, though, I'm just really curious where this story goes. Is this essentially just like a backdoor epilogue for Taylor's Injustice series?
That's what I really think. Okay. I was sitting here reading this and going, it feels like he got a chance to completely kill his deceased universe. The stories were all done. He got a chance to put it in the coffin and nail that shit closed. It's done. He did not get a chance to do it with Injustice. So I can't help but wonder if that's what this is as well.
Yeah.
His way of making sure that his creations stay his and bring their stories to a close, which I respect a shit ton.
Yeah. Because like it's also on my mind about another book he wrote that was also featured in this with Earth 2 characters, you know, Val Zod and Red Lois. Like, are they ever coming back?
No.
You know, they were essentially a big part of the story, but then their part of the story got ended very quickly out of the blue by Injustice. So it's just so weird. Like, where does this end? Is this all just for John to fight Injustice World? Like, it's so freaking weird.
It might be. It could be just for John to be put into that situation where he has to.
He's cursed to always go up against evil versions of his father.
Yeah.
Sucks.
And how is he going to be able to take out this one?
Yeah.
Because this one, more than any of the other ones, that Ultraman he's got Superman's powers, but he ain't fucking Superman.
No.
This is Superman, but it's Superman who just turned off on his safety switch.
Yeah.
You know, that's the most dangerous thing in the universe. How does he combat that? Because he hasn't had that yet. He's dealt with idiot fucking Superman, but he hasn't dealt with real Superman gone bad.
Yeah.
Deluded that he's doing good, which is even worse. I don't know. We could be looking at John having to kill him.
Oh, God, I hope not.
you want to say no, but it's Tom Taylor writing.
Yeah, but John doesn't need to kill his father, man. That's too far.
Not his dad, and they make sure to point that out like 5 times an issue.
I don't know, man. I don't know if I'd like that choice.
What do you think, Brandon?
I could see it. I don't know that I would necessarily agree with it.
Yeah. It's a choice. It's a hell of a choice if that happens.
Said it's a hell of a choice. That's what Nathan said about Zealot. It's a
choice.
Well, I mean,
Nathan's right. I don't know. At end of the day, though, 8.5 out of 10 for this issue. Definitely not bad. Kind of slow. Not much happened. John met people.
Yeah. John met people. Thanks, John.
Yeah.
But
I don't know that I have much else to add. I mean, it's I've kind of speculated the whole thing to death. But I just kind of maintain that it's interesting seeing him interact with these Injustice versions of the heroes that he knows and to a certain extent loves, and just how different their lives are from the people that John knows. So, I mean, I enjoyed it, but I agree that it's definitely slower. And I wonder how that's going to play out story-wise, because I think there's only two issues left, six-issue series. So unless this is leading to a, you know, Injustice themed event or storyline or something like that, kind of like with Aquaman, then it's hard to say how this is going to end, whether or not it's going to end in a satisfying way. So I also gave this one an 8 out of 10.
We got 8.25 from me. I completely forgot we only got two issues left, and kind of bums me out, and it does give me a little pause for concern, because I mean, that's only 2 months away, the end of this book. Or is this going on pause for Night Terrors?
No, this one's still going.
This one's still going. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. All right. So by the time Night Terrors is all done, this is going to be done too, and we don't have any kind of news or inclination that there's a follow-up series to this, do we?
No, not yet. Anyway,
that's scary.
I mean, we also only have solicits up to the end of August, I think, so there's still time for something to be announced in September, but that's like there's going to be a delay anyway. Like they'll probably get to August. I think then we'll have what, December solicit, so they'll probably announce something for January if there is a follow-up.
I wonder if that means that John will be out of the picture until then.
No, not necessarily. I mean, that depends.
I mean, not necessarily. It's like, yeah, where does he go?
Yeah.
Does he come back to Earth with the hope to go back out there? I got to be driving Brandon nuts. I love to speculate. It's half the fun of reading this shit. It's like, what are they going to do next? But
oh, no,
I'm fine. I'll quit. All right.
I think we all like speculating. There's just so many different ways that could go.
Truth be told, I have two issues left of the King Conan miniseries from Jason Aaron and Mahmoud Azra, and I really want to finish it. So I'm like trying to read it while also paying attention to this. I'm not gonna lie.
Fair enough. I'd be reading more Grant Morrison JLA right now too.
Yeah. No, I just like they just, because they're, well, I don't want to derail the conversation, but like they just had this really emotional scene where Conan is basically yelling at his son, like, you know, oh, I want you to go off and explore like I did, and I'm gonna banish you until you do it. And he's like, no, father, I won't. And it's really melodramatic and great. And I'm like right in the middle of it, and then you ask me a question, I'm like, oh wait, no. So I'm sorry. I'll try to focus.
Hold on a second, I'm almost done.
So we get to the end of the page.
Exactly.
All good.
All good.
Yeah, I think we've talked this issue to death at this point.
We kind of have talked this issue to death. We have might end in somebody's death. There's no telling. But we are gonna go and move on over to the next book in the show, and that is covered by your one and only asshole, me. It is Shazam number 2, and this has 2 epilogues, so hold on, it's pretty much all the same story, so I'm just gonna do these all at once. It's the same team that does it all too, so makes it easier that way. scripted, plotted, and penciled by Mark Waid and Dan Mora, with Alejandro Sanchez on colors, letters from Toy Petiri, and Mora on that awesome cover as well. We pick up At Home and the Shaz fam flipping out on Billy because in last issue, he saved some people and basically called them all filthy maggots. And naturally, it went viral. You know, everybody's got a phone right now. He was talking mad shit about everybody there. But Billy wants to bolt because his family won't quit talking to him about it. But as if his day wasn't bad enough, he opens the door to find a space dino and he slams the door shut in the dinosaur's face. It's there to give him like a 6 foot plus tall stack of intergalactic paperwork for him to fill out for immigration and for mixing magic and science, which is forbidden, when he fixed that spacecraft of the space dinos that he had tea with in issue number one. That was an unbelievable note to write down. Oh boy.
Yeah, that one page though was fantastic, and it did not make my favorite moment, but it could have just Freddie and Billy, like, I just need no more weird things to happen. Open store, good afternoon, what is that, a dinosaur? What, that was fantastic.
Yes, and they like drinking tea. Yeah. Gross tea, but tea nonetheless. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so dinos aside, he bolts again with the family in tow, only to stumble on the psycho pirate robbing a museum. Side notes here, guys, because you know I'm going to say something anyways. What the hell? Psycho Pirate shouldn't have his mask. Mrs. Nakano, Gotham City's mayor wife, should have that mask. We haven't seen anything to do with that mask since then.
Well, Psycho Pirate is all part of Dark Crisis, too.
Oh, he was, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, his mask back then.
That what a bunch whole of crap. Thing
just got completely ignored.
Forgotten. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, all right. Psycho Pirate is back, and he's attacking. Anyway, they fight, and the captain is getting pissed off again while they are doing it. He fires a killing shot at Psycho Pirate and realizes what he's done, and then moves so fast he gets in front of the blast. That is fucking epic. It was so cool, and it looks so good on the page, especially with all of that lightning. Anyway, we find out that it wasn't Psycho Pirate who caused Billy to lose his shit either time, and now he's got to figure that out or we get no more captain. So he's like, I can never say the word again if that's what the captain is going to keep doing. Epilogue number one, at the Rock of Eternity. Both of these epilogues are definitely different. At the Rock of Eternity in epilogue one, Freddy is there looking for a way to get powers of his own, which surprised the shit out of me. It's interesting. So, he calls them all the Shazamily. That is not interesting. interesting again, Freddy finds the Shazam gods around a campfire talking about a tournament that they are all having that puts solely one of them in charge of Billy, and more so the captain, whoever wins that tournament. Then they realize he's there and they think he's a spy for Billy. End of the first epilogue. Epilogue two, Mary comes home, calls out for people, no one answers, turns on video game, falls asleep. End of epilogue two. That's all I caught out of epilogue two. Anyway, I mean, I guess it was just to show us that Mary came home.
Well, but in any case, set up for Night Terrors anyway,
I suppose.
Yeah, because it says to be continued in Night Terrors. Night
Terrors, yeah. No, well. So
we're getting a lot of that this month.
Yeah, we really, really, really have. Yeah. Everything was awesome about this. Everything, the Psycho Pirate thing threw me, but I'm glad to hear I just didn't remember it right. I despise changes in continuity unless it's something horribly wrong, like the Beast Boy Cyborg thing, then delete it and delete it expeditiously.
Yeah.
But all of this was gorgeous too. I've never seen Mary Marvel drawn so well as she was in that epilogue. Yeah. It's the second time in a row that this book was outstanding. I gave it a 9 out of 10. I had a really, really good time with this book.
Yeah, it's been really good so far. I've always stated I love a good mystery, and there's a lot of mysteries going on in this book. Like, there's so much plot to cover, but it's paced so damn well. It's
8.75, not a 9. 8.75 out of 10.
Fair enough. I also gave it an 8.75 out of 10. It's almost a masterclass in, well, not necessarily a masterclass, but like a prime example of Mark Waid's writing ability, of just having so many threads to follow and giving them all adequate time to shine, and it feeling so fresh and well flowing,
rather than like chop 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 chop.
Yeah,
like flip back and forth like you're reading two different timelines and they're trying to cram it all into one.
Exactly. Yeah, it all kind of flows perfectly together. It's really, really well done. And I do love that when they were talking, the Shazamly, I know you don't like that term, Josh, but Shazamly it is. when all the Shazamly were talking about what possibly could have caused Billy to just go crazy, the first thought on my mind was Mr. Mind. And then I read, I think it was Darla saying, is it that worm, Mr. Mind? Like, shit. And they're like, no, it can't be him. I'm like, God damn it. But that makes sense. Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. The art was wonderful. The story's great. It's damn worth it.
Damn worth it.
Damn worth it.
Damn worth it.
Yeah, no, it's just absolutely spectacular. I mean, I kind of echo pretty much everything else. And I just love how, you know, Waid is kind of able to seamlessly capture all the voices of the Shazamly, and really, you know, just kind of make them feel like genuine people, like kids. You know, they want their powers back to a certain extent, but they also understand that like Billy kind of has it right now and there's not really much they can do, but they're still kids and they're still jealous. So there's a lot of good stuff there. And like I said, just digging the crap out of the art. Dan Mora can do no wrong. So yeah, this is a 9 for me.
You know what I think it is?
What? Tell me. I need to know.
It's nothing to do with, nothing to do with magic or like mind control or any villain. Billy's just under so much freaking stress, and that when he is the captain, it just comes out in a super fashion.
No, I think it's the gods. I think it's the gods combating, and then whoever's left, are they have more control over his person, who he is, his abilities, and his personality. And I think if they keep on going the way that it is, the captain could turn into a badin. We know that that won't happen.
Black Billy, perhaps.
Oh, Black Billy, Shamalam.
Oh God. I should have seen that coming, but that caught me off guard.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So I think that's Shazam number 2.
That is Shazam number 2. And if we've got nothing else to say about that, we're gonna take a brief commercial break. We will be right back. Welcome back to the Geek Matrix, everybody. You are not alone if you're feeling geeky. We are going to kick this back off with Rob kicking us off once again. And this one's all about Poison Ivy.
Yeah, bust out the creams and gels because it's going to get itchy in here. This is number 13, written by G. Willow Wilson.
That's nasty.
With art from across the book, Mauricio Takara, Guillaume March, A.L. Kaplan, and Kelly Jones, a name I haven't heard in a long time, with colors from Eric Prieto, Jose Villarrubia, and A.L. Kaplan, with letters from Hassan Osmane El-Hau, and a cover from Jessica Fong. A very, very nice cover from Jessica Fong. So Ivy is back with Harley now, but is getting a little overwhelmed by the city yet again. She's too seen. Like, there's no hiding spots. So she tries to go around the city and just be incognito, but she's found very quickly by Catwoman, who gives her a tip that the bats are looking for her. She notices Batman overhead as she walks away, so she gets ahead of him and lures Batman to an old haunt in Robinson Park that she knows very well, where they can talk quietly. He does his usual threatening nonsense and then leaves. So does Ivy. She leaves to go to Slaughter Swamp for some peace and quiet. And Croc, Killer Croc, is there squatting in an old shack, which I think is might actually be the exact spot that Slaughter Swamp was the one with Grundy, right?
Slaughter Swamp is the one with Grundy. Yes, yeah. It is. It's where he was born. Yeah.
Yeah. So Croc is not willing to give up this spot that he is in, because his usual sewer spot is being taken over by development, thanks to one Lex Luthor developing high rises across the city. So he asks Ivy to help him get his old spot back. So she heads there next to one of the build sites, pretending to be a landscaper, sneaks onto the site, is talked to by a foreman, but she's allowed to just go on her merry way. Then finds him later on murdered with a flower over his face, which very much feels like Floronic Man yet again. They're definitely pushing that idea that Floronic Man is not dead, despite the fact that Ivy ate him.
I mean, it could be Bloom, right?
It could be. That'd be wild.
It would be that'd like be
friggin' wild.
Catch you off guard. Where the hell did that come? Kind
of. Yeah. Like, no, yeah. I don't think Ivy has gone up against Bloom yet. So that'd be, I'm all for that. Actually, I love Mr. Bloom as a character. He's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm a fan too, man. He's I like his personality. And the way he looks, just in general, he's an interesting character. Yeah. Him and the Ten-Eyed Man would make it would be like, I would read an issue of just them like walking around a room talking to each other. Like, what the hell?
Yeah,
well, it would be psychedelic without having unusual visuals.
Yeah, pretty much. I got to say though, this issue was gorgeous throughout. The pages with Kelly Jones were just spot on, though. That was like classic Kelly Jones Batman. it was really, really cool to see.
See, that I had a problem with. Most of the art is spectacular, like always. But on the page after Ivy meets Catwoman, the panel of Batman's shadow is horrendous. And the two of Ivy after the first one literally looks like her head is detached from her body and is just like sitting 6 inches down from her shoulders. And then the other one, she's got just such very different facial features. And then that kind of stuff kind of pops in a few panels here and there after that. And then, like Rob mentioned, but he did so admiringly, there's some fucking long-eared year two Batman shit going on here.
Oh god, yeah.
I'll read it, but I'm good on the long ear, like the ridiculous, I've got 9-inch stiletto ears.
Yeah,
that shit is too much for me anymore. But the rest of the art was great, and the story is pretty cool. It's an interesting way for the story to move, if not just a little unexpected. I don't know if interesting is the right word here. It could be concerning, because I guess what we got here was more of a transitional issue. Blow past the Batfam problem, like just ridiculously quick with your very, very generic Batman voice. And then you go on to the destruction of the third giant building in Gotham in what, the last year? Arkham Tower, Oregon Place. Oh, wait. No, go back a couple. We got, go back a couple years. We've got Arkham Asylum, Arkham Tower, Oregon Place, and now this megalith of a condo building that's supposed to be taller than any other building in Gotham. Also, side note, nowhere at all inside is a date night like the cover suggests there will be.
Yeah, but you once told me don't believe stuff on the cover.
never believe the cover. Believe the cover. This is the first issue of Poison Ivy where I wasn't just raving, and that makes me really bummed out. The issue felt way too breezy for me, and the art was very, very different in a jolting way when it flipped. You could definitely tell who was drawing where, and in the bad parts, it looks like it was drawn in an Adderall-fueled last-minute rage. The rest that isn't super bad is damn good. I feel really let down after 12 books of completely awesome, to be perfectly honest with you. This one just didn't sing to me. I gave it a 7 out of 10.
Damn.
8.5 for me. I'm a sucker. I love the long ears, and I love Kelly Jones' exaggerated style, because he's so close to that Bernie Wrightson 70s style on Swamp Thing. And then later in the 80s, he did a book with Jim Starlin called Batman the Cult, and that's like my favorite Batman look ever. It's just that perfect, like, kind of grim and spooky, all mastered and mirrored in shadow and everything. So
see, that
art-wise, it's great for me. And then the story, I enjoyed that, because it kind of, like, it really did slow everything down, and it's just like, okay, Ivy needs to find a place to just kind of lay low so the Bat family can't find her, and, you know, just kind of get her stuff together. And I was like, okay, we've been on the road for quite a while. Now that we're back in Gotham, let's just, like, take a breather.
Yeah. And
let, you know, Poison Ivy get her stuff together. So I appreciate it for that. So actually, this one, I think, came together really nicely for me.
Yeah, the kind of find her bearings again after being away for so long.
Exactly. Well, I mean, she doesn't, though. She goes straight on to some terrorist activity. But
does that only because she has to. It's like a side quest.
Side quest. She shouldn't have talked to that goddamn wizard. No, let me get this straight. I don't hate the long ears in the right kind of environment. That it did not belong in this. You throw this into the cult, you know, the cult, this kind of a look works great in the cult. But it would be like seeing a Frank Miller Batman in a Scott Snyder book. It just doesn't work right, you know, for me anyway.
We saw a Frank Miller Batman in a Chip Zdarsky book. Does that work?
No, because that's weird. Zdarsky does do weird. that makes sense to me. Almost.
I will say, like, when I was younger, the long ears kind of bugged me, because I was always a fan of just, like, he's not an actual mythological creature. Like, he's not an actual force of nature. He's a human being. Why the long ears? Why the pointed cape shoulders? And I've never really understood that. But the older I got, the more I appreciated Kelly Jones' art, because it makes that version of Batman very creepy. Right, which I think is the point that's being trying to get across. And what I think works here is because this is a part of the story where Ivy busts out her new form as in her power set with the Lamia spores, where she got her little upgrade, where you see, like, that really monstrous Ivy. Now you get a really monstrous looking Batman to go with it, and face against. And I think if you had that monstrous Ivy form going up against just normal human looking Batman, it would look so awkward. So
There's a book that Neil Gaiman and Dave McKean did in the 80s called Black Orchid, and there's one issue where Black Orchid goes to Gotham City, and she goes to Arkham, and I think it's before or after she makes her way to Arkham, she runs into Batman, and Like, you basically don't see him at all. He's just entirely cloaked in shadow. But for the brief times that you see him, all of his features are super exaggerated, and he just looks like this shadowy demon that's just kind of lurking. And that's kind of what I think of, you know, in certain moody, kind of spooky aspects, especially here. Like, that's how Batman should be, just like this, almost like a creature, just someone that lurks in the background and has like things that are obviously not anatomically possible, but, you know,
yeah,
in the context of a comic where he's supposed to reflect a bat, it makes sense. So yeah.
But if I had to pick one over the other, if I had to pick the stiletto ears or the pointed cape shoulders, like you had in the early 2000s, late 90s, like I've seen in Grant Morrison's JLA today, I can't stand the pointed cape shoulders. That bugs the crap out of me. I will always pick the stiletto ears.
that's just officially the
God,
name.
Wait,
now.
You should read JLA Titans. Gil Jimenez does the art for that. Familiar. And yeah. Batman's shoulders are like spikes.
The funniest
thing. Like, let me see if I can find
not even spikes. They're like spires. I mean,
JLA Titans.
Long, huge lightning. They've come up into mountain peaks, dude.
Devin Grayson and Phil Jimenez, right?
Yes.
Okay, this I gotta see. What in the shit? What does that remind me of?
A mountain landscape. looking at a mountain range on the horizon.
That is shoulder spikes to the nth degree. Like, I don't like that at all.
Like, it's somebody put his shoulder pads in sideways or some shit.
I like Phil Jimenez's art, but like, this is the problem with that time for Batman. Like, that was apparently the status quo. He just had spikes in his cape on his shoulders for some fucking reason, and that was, everybody had to draw it that way. I don't know why. It made no sense. I hated it.
Just as a point of reference, and I'm going to say it now, I used point of reference wrong, but just so I can get it out now, before I forget, Brandon, you were just saying, like, it kind of has that mythos feel, like he belongs, like he's from the night, he's this larger than life shadow thing, and he needs to be able to enact fear in there, and that's 100% true. But, and without getting into it too much, we see him doing that, or starting to do that again, rather, in our next book. So he doesn't need that exaggerated art to pull it off and feel like he's really doing it. And I'm not saying that that's a reason to not like the art. I'm just saying that I guess that's why it's not a thing for me. Like, I didn't mind it when I was growing up reading it and when it was in the books reading it, but now, like, going back, I kind of feel like you listening to one of my jokes. That's all. But
wait, before we continue, is this the book where Wally and Kyle have that little, like, petty rivalry?
I mean, that's like all of them. That's like the 90s. Yeah.
Once I didn't read a lot of Wally and Kyle. Like, obviously I read a lot of Wally and Kyle today with Grant Morrison's run, because I had the first story arc, and they just, like, right off the bat are just at each other's throats.
Yeah, there's a book called The Flash, Green Lantern, Faster Friends from the 90s, and that one really taps into it, where it's like, I forget, it's like a team up between Alan and Jay and Kyle and Wally. I forget the context of the story necessarily, but they're on like some planet or other dimension or something, and they're basically forced to kind of get along. And the whole running thing is, like, you know, Alan and Jay, obviously they've become friends over the years, but Wally and Kyle, they hate each other, they can't stand each other. And so the whole thing is just kind of like the relationship between Flashes and Green Lanterns, and like, they don't like each other now, but they'll eventually get there. And they do, actually. They, like, towards the end of the run on JLA, they become pretty good friends, or at least begrudging friends. Let's say frenemies.
Yeah, frenemies. That sounds more
I think now, well, actually, there's a crossover. If you ever read, there's a collection called, sorry, I'm just gonna go in the rabbit hole, but there's a collection called The Flash, by Mark Miller and Grant Morrison. Man, I read this years ago, but it collects this three-part story called Three of a Kind, and it's a three-issue arc team up between basically all the legacy characters at the time, Connor Hawk, Kyle, and Wally, and they're on like a cruise together, and coincidentally enough, they're stopping like a trio of their own respective villains. And that one also kind of taps into like, you know, we didn't really like each other at first, but we're kind of growing on each other, so it's nice. So there you go.
Yeah, I got to get more into that friendship. I love both those characters, but I did not read a lot of interactions between them.
I want that Robin Reborn.
Oh, the McFarlane figure? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm keep on looking. I'm like, man, that gold label is great and all, but there that Robin Reborn one is awesome. I think that one and the Damian Wayne from Winter 2021. That's probably the Damian I'm gonna get.
This issue?
Huh?
Let me check my seals out for a second.
Check your who?
My my collection app.
Your collection app. For figurines?
No, for comics. Okay, I don't have the story arc that Brandon just sent in the chat. It's Green Lantern 96.
If you ever
don't have that issue,
come across, it's a collection called The Flash by Mark Millar and Grant Morrison that has that story arc collected. It's basically a small little off story that they just kind of chucked in there, I think, for some reason. But it's a fun one. Yeah, I would say if you want to read it.
Oh, you know what? I've got it, Rob. I've got it. I'll get that over to you. I'll send you some copies.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Even though the Green Lantern part was written by Ron Myers, but
yeah,
Morrison and Miller did The Flash.
Yeah, well, because it's technically a crossover with those books at the time. So Millar and Morrison were writing The Flash. Yeah, Chuck Dixon was doing Green Arrow at the time, and then Ron Mars was doing Green Lantern. So they all just kind of teamed up and then did the three-part story.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
See, that's a trinity that works.
Yeah, they're surprisingly fun. Like it's a good one.
And not even just like Kyle, Wally, and Connor. I mean even Hal, Barry, and Ollie. Even though Barry and Ollie tend to be at odds with each other, I think that's the funny thing
because so remember when I said like Hal is like the mutual friend between Ollie and Barry?
Yeah.
In this one, it's like Connor is the mutual friend between Connor's like the mutual friend between Wally and Kyle because he's basically Kyle says something like, I'm closer to Connor because we just kind of get on in our special way, but Wally's like, we're getting there, but we're still not friends. And then I guess Wally and Connor have been friends for some reason. They might have teamed up in some past issue, I don't remember, but yeah, Connor's like their mutual friend and they're just kind of hanging out because they have to. It's weird.
Yeah.
Sounds like real life. I've been there before.
Yeah, I gotta check that story arc out.
Didn't have to worry about offending somebody with superpowers, but been there before.
Yeah.
Oh, it doesn't take a detective to know that that would be a bad situation to get yourself in. And speaking of detectives, we are going to roll out our last issue of the normal podcast land episode. Brandon, let's do Batman.
Sure. This is Batman 136, written by Chip Zdarsky with art from Belen Ortega, colors from Tomu Murray, and letters from, what was it? Clayton Cowles. This issue really is just kind of Batman back in Gotham, getting his affairs in order after everything that's happened with Failsafe and with being in another universe. So we start as he checks in with Michael Holt, who kind of gives him the medical once over and clears him for the most part, although he's a little bit wary about that hand and whether or not he should tell his family about it, but they decide to just keep it under wraps for now.
Well, he does anyway.
He does anyway. checks in with, and this is still bizarre to even be saying this, but it's the beauty of comics, I guess, his second personalities, or an R, who is chiding him over the fact that he is weak and has fallen, and I think it's time that someone else took over for Batman, a better Batman, you might even say, but he doesn't have time for that, and decides that Zur will not have his day in the sun, at least not while he is still around. He goes over to the Orgum Hotel, where he's checking in with the Penguin's children, who have set up these like small versions of gambling, similar to the Iceberg Lounge across the city. Naturally, being the Batman, he has to instill some fear in them and remind them that he's there and that such criminal activity will not stand in Gotham City.
I am the law.
Exactly. but he's able to do so. Gets a quick update from Oracle that Selina has broken out of prison, goes over to New York City, I guess all in the same day, or because it says the East End, and I didn't know if they were talking about the East End of Gotham or the East End of New York City. I just wasn't paying attention. Gotham? I was like, there's no way you got, I mean, I know Gotham's supposed to be in New Jersey, and I'm sure the Batmobile can go very, very fast, but
Unless
you're beating that New York traffic, I don't think you're getting there. Anyway, point is, travels to the East End, has a conversation with Selina, tells her sort of about the things that have been going on, but she's just kind of like, you know, we all have our secrets, and I'm going to do my thing. But before he can process that any further, he is called back to Old Wayne Manor because someone has tripped the security alarm, and wondering what the commotion could be, he comes up to find that his children are getting into some Bat Family shenanigans, cooking pancakes and trying to have a feel-good moment, which seems like a nice change of pace given everything that he's been through, and seems like for a moment everything will be better. But as we have undoubtedly seen by now, everything is not better, especially up in old Bruce Wayne's mind. As for just a moment, while it seems like things are happy on the surface, things are not fine as he sees his family covered in flames. Of course, this being a mental image rather than a physical manifestation of that. Our backup is an early flashback story to Zur-En-Arr testing out Failsafe and trying to make sure that the robot is impregnable and is as fierce and destructive as it can possibly be, but also seeing that Failsafe asserts some autonomy in these small little moments where it's possible that he might subvert and actually, you know, act against whatever Zur-En-Arr's will is. And the backup, I should say, is also written by Chip Zdarsky, with art by Jorge Corona, colors from Ivan Plasencia, and letters also from Clayton Cowles. I was really pleased with this issue because this is sort of what I've been clamoring for. And it also just makes me hate some of the stuff that is coming up even more because it's like, okay, we're back in Gotham. We're going to start addressing literally everything that has happened with Failsafe and with the visions that he's been having and all that stuff. Like, okay, cool. You know, and this was a great way
fucking
to do it.
Right.
Like, yeah. Things are not right in Gotham. And things are certainly not right for Batman either, but we're going to get there. And then I remember that the next 2 months are consumed by night terrors. And then the next 2 months after that are consumed by the Gotham War, which admittedly gets some setup here, but I'm just like, oh my God, please. Like, can we get back to the story? Was great. Like I enjoyed this a lot and I gave this issue a 9, but, and the art was fantastic. Like just gorgeous in every panel, or nearly every panel at least. But I was like, oh my God, like this is what I want to focus on. Can we stay here,
right?
And not have to go through nightmare and then another nightmare after that. So
there's a carrot. Don't dangle that carrot.
I know. Give me the damn carrot. Like, let me just eat it.
Want the damn carrot. I mean, as far as that first part goes, man, I mean, all I could, if I had a pressed for time, all I could say is holy shit. It was exactly what I needed this issue and then some. I've been begging for Batman to be human, to feel his age, to feel things that he's feeling. For all the events in Gotham coming out in the wash, especially Selina keeping Penguin secret from Bruce, which, like we learn or are reminded here, is ultimately what caused all of this shit. And like the last page asks, is there more to Zur than what we've seen so far? And I mean, it does acknowledge that Failsafe is still out there somewhere. That's good. Zdarsky nailed it. Ortega and Moray nailed it. Jorge Jimenez nailed it. This was perfect. Batman's head is a little off in just a few places. And his eyes, when he's realizing something, I hate the way it gets drawn. Because like they always put his pupils as pinpoints and his eyes are nearly perfectly round. But past that, because those are really minor points, but they still are points. So the first part I would have gave a 9.75 to, hands down. Second part though, so at the very last panel, did you guys get the impression that that was definitely meant to allude to us seeing more Zurinar and Failsafe sooner rather than later?
I maybe not, definitely more Failsafe. I don't know about more Zur sooner rather than later. That definitely feels like something Chip Zdarsky's just going to build towards. Like there's something going on with Zur, because obviously we have Night Terrors, and like Brandon said, then we got the Gotham War, and then we got to deal with God knows what else. I feel like Zurinar is going to be a thing popping up a little bit later, but definitely going to be addressed.
All right. I mean, so where he says, "I'll be back, robot, with your next update." I mean, that's like, okay. I wonder where the hell this is going. So this backup really didn't need to happen. It's kind of cool without this being actual foreshadowing. I kind of don't see the purpose for it. The fact that that's not clear, if that kind of bugs me. First part 9.75 in the back part, I'm not feeling Corona. Over the past year, I've started to see Jorge Corona as almost like a tolerable version of Riley Rosmo. It's just become more in that way. I don't hate it. There's just a lot of similarities in their styles. It's just that style of art just makes me not like it. Might be my least favorite regular artist right now, or at least pretty close. But the backup got really low, 6.5 out of 10. But can't bring it all the way down because of that. Just can't. The first part was nearly perfect. Batman 136 gets a 9 out of 10.
Right on.
I know I saw you shaking your head in disbelief when I was talking about Jorge Corona. You think I'm nuts.
Well, I am in disbelief about that, but I was shaking my head because I was finishing off a peach flavored rock star and it was really sour.
Party like a rock star.
Exactly.
Peach flavored rock star.
Yeah. I'm not touching that one. All right. So shit, what else is there to say? Like fucking
nothing. About Batman.
It was good. I liked it. I really liked it. That moment at the end with Bruce looking around and seeing the family in flames spawned a new meme format on Reddit. I'm really excited about it. And Kirk busting out the first meme for us. Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was
good. Excellent. that was pretty funny. That was pretty funny. That was really neat because I feel like it's been a long time, like a real long time, that since we've seen the whole Bat family around a table all together. Now, here's the thing. It's kind of like the damn Mothman. Whenever you see it, tragedy is going to happen.
Yeah.
It's just like that. It's like you flip the page, you look at it, and you're like, oh, dude, that's cool, man. And then you remember. Like, this is how Death of the Family has. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This can't lead anywhere good. Hopefully that's not the case this time. Zdarsky has been surprisingly just a game throughout the whole way. No real dips for me. I've been digging it throughout the whole thing. I said surprisingly, but to keep a Batman book continuously striving without hitting any real slow spots, especially for me, it's kind of impressive. I fucking dig it, dude. I mean, that's how even with me not liking the backup, the fact that the first part is that good, I still give the whole issue a 9 out of 10. I mean, I just don't do that shit. That's how good this issue is. Like, you should be buying Batman. And we as a podcast crew make fun of how much Batman there is for sale. But if you're going to be buying Batman, whatever issue it is, 130. When did Zdarsky take over?
125.
Start there and just catch up.
That's what I did. Like, honestly, it got me back into collecting physical Batman. I want to get Zdarsky. I'm missing 125 and 126 because I forgot which issue you started at, but like, I have all the issues so far apart from those two.
It's good stuff, man. Support good stories and support your LCS for sure.
Exactly.
All right, guys.
And I gotta say that the last thing I'll say about it, one of my favorite parts about this so far with Zdarsky's Batman is that it's definitely, as is usually the case with like long Batman runs, it puts Batman through the freaking ringer and he gets really fucked up. But he's only fucking up Batman. He's not fucking up the Bat family, right? Nightwing's not getting shot in the head. Jason Todd's not getting beat with a crowbar. Batgirl's not getting shot through the spine. Like, there's no nonsense to them. It's like they're getting beat up by a robot, but like they get beat up by robots every day. So it's nothing. The only person that's getting seriously fucked up here is Bruce. And I kind of appreciate that. And that sounds but like, if you get what I mean, like
it's what needs to happen with his character now. I've been saying it for a damn year or longer since Fear State for sure.
Yeah. If anything is going to help him get closer to the family, it's going to the point where like he's just breaking. Like, they've been talking about the fact that Batman's getting older for years, and now they're finally showing it. They've been talking for a couple of years now about how he's getting a little slower, he's getting a little older.
Started all the way back in Fear State, man.
Yeah, it's finally like Chip Zdarsky is taking that thread and pulling it hard, and like, okay, yeah, Batman is going through a mental breakdown. Like, he's having panic attacks, he's having visions, he's having delusions, and just something's got to give, and it has. And I love this. And that backup, honestly, I love the backup, just to see like that, just how well hidden Zoranar is from Bruce himself. Just like pop in and pop out at a moment's notice, and Bruce has no freaking clue.
Nope, none.
It was fantastic.
I thought so.
9.25 out of 10 for the issue, honestly.
Oh, hell yeah. All right. Well, I guess that is it for all of the books that we are going to cover for those listening in regular podcast land. I'm just going to call it that from now on. You guys can call it whatever you want, but to me, it's regular podcast land. All right, so we're going to wrap it up with the same way that we usually do, with our top three or favorite moment. Guys, listeners, girls, and everything else in between, we are abandoning the biggest stinker unless we feel there is a reason to bring it back, or there's just a book that we feel we just need to do some shit talking about at the end of the episode. That's just what we're going to do. We're going to retire Cleveland because, honestly, it's the dawn of DC And since then, the books have been pretty damn good.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time I had a proper biggest stinker.
No, it's been over a month since we've done a biggest stinker. So I think it's time to flush it. And that's what we're going to do. But we're still keeping the top three in our favorite moment. So, yeah. Brandon, what did you have for yours? Top three and whatever your favorite standout moments in this week were.
Three, I had Poison Ivy. Two was Shazam. And number one, I had to give to Batman. Favorite moment, though, is out of Poison Ivy. I know you didn't really love the art here, but there's a panel where it's just... it's like Batman is basically... just like all of a cape. It's hard to describe, but it's
no, like, yeah, I know, it's just, I know like, the it's panel just the that cape, you're talking
and
about.
Like, and it looks so cool. Like, I wish I could just have that as a background.
I agree. Right, that was a badass moment.
What about you, Rob?
So number three, I had Poison Ivy. Number two, I had Batman. And number one, I'll save her for later.
You'll save it for later. You definitely don't have to, because I'll tell you what, you go ahead and say yours, because not my number one is also not a book that we reviewed on this podcast. I'm assuming that's why you're gonna save it.
Yeah.
So that means that it's even more of an incentive for you to take your ears on over to our Discord for $2.99 a month. You can get the link at our website, thegeekmatrixpod.com. And you'll be able to hear our spotlight show covering what our number one books are going to be. What's your number one book, Rob?
Yeah, you can find out why The Flash Number 800 is my number one book of the week. It's a hell of a book. Favorite moments, I had a few, but I finally settled on Bruce seeing his family on fire just for the shock of it all. Just like, oh shit. Like, okay, it's really bad. Like, you think he's been put through the ringer? Nah, okay, now he's fucked up. He is sufficiently fucked up now.
Yeah, there's something broken inside of there. Yeah. All right, my top three are going to be featuring stuff that's on the Spotlight show as well. Like I said, number three is going to The Flash. Number two, Batman. It would have been number one if not for that backup and for the issue that took number one, which was Steelworks number one. So you're going to have to turn into the Spotlight show and hear all about both of those books. My favorite moment out of the books we've covered this in this episode are it's the second my runner up was Seeing the Family, but you know, it definitely got runner up because, you know, Bad Omens and all that. My favorite, and this was quite the artistic choice, but when Bruce is going into his mind palace and we see him meditating, he is sitting there meditating wearing only his robotic hand, underwear, and utility belt. What? Yeah, okay, I get meditating in your underwear, no problem. Why is he wearing the utility belt?
Yeah, really.
Well, I mean, he has his suit on. I think maybe it's just the way you're seeing the coloring, but it looks like he has his suit on because it's gray and you can kind of see where the cuffs of his hands protrude from the suit, so he's not like naked.
Oh, you know what? I thought he was. Now I see the line right at the back of his neck. Whoops. All right. Okay. So it's going to go back to being the family then. I really
there is that. One where it's like he's all in shadow and you can only see the belt. And, you know, you could potentially make that dirty in your mind if you wanted
and make that but, dirty. I just thought it was funny. He was sitting there in his underwear and his utility belt. I'm like, why in the fuck is he wearing his utility belt? I mean, is he gonna need shark repellent? All right, that is the end of our normal show, but you can always head over to thegeekmatrixpod.com and sign up for our Discord to get access to our Spotlight show with the rest of the books and, of course, the big prize, access to more of us. All right, we are out of here now, which means that you are on your home. So damn it, you better behave. But remember, in the Geek Matrix, you are not alone.